Kathleen McAuliffe's new book, This Is Your Brain on Parasites, How Tiny Creatures Manipulate Our Behavior and Shape Society, is an investigation of the myriad ways that parasites control other creatures, including humans, and how they feel, think, and act. These tiny organisms can only live inside another animal, and as McAuliffe reveals, they have many evolutionary motives for manipulating their host's behavior. Far more often than appreciated, these puppeteers orchestrate the interplay between predator and prey. With astonishing precision, parasites can coax rats to approach cats, spiders to transform the patterns of their webs, and fish to draw the attention of birds that then swoop down to feast on them. And please do not think that humans are immune to this. They are not. And to find out more, we talk to Kathleen McAuliffe. Again, the name of the book, This Is Your Brain on Parasites, How Tiny Creatures Manipulate Our Behavior and Shape Society. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Kathleen McAuliffe to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
What brought you to the subject of wanting to look at parasites and how they affect us?
I was just searching on the web, reading my usual science sites, and I came across an article that absolutely intrigued me. It was about a parasite that gets into the brain of rodents and actually transforms its innate fear of cats into an attraction. And when I say attraction, I mean a sexual attraction. The infected rodent actually becomes attracted to the scent of cat urine. And as a result, needless to say, it's not long for this world because, you know, it does not avoid cat territory.
Right.
So it's soon eaten. And this is exactly what the parasite wants because it can only replicate inside the cat's gut.
And this is not a one-off. There are several examples, as you illustrate in the book, of this type of behavior.
Yes, there's a whole host of them, and one more amazing than the next. I mean, there is a parasitic wasp that attaches its egg to the belly of a spider, and then it begins pumping out chemicals as it's growing that cause the spider to abandon its normal weaving style, its circular motif, and instead it creates basically a nursery for the parasite, and it even designs a special decorative motif to shield the parasite from its enemies. And there's just a host of other similarly amazing examples. There's, for example, a parasitic worm that gets into the brain of fish, and the fish suddenly develops the urge to swim to the surface and flip over and all but wave their fins at predatory birds circling overhead, which then swoop down to pluck them out of the water. And, of course, the bird is the parasite's next host.
So two definitional questions. The first one being, should we be grossed out by this or should we be ultimately fascinated by it?
I think both. I have to confess that there are some parasites that absolutely repulse me. But at the same time, they're awe-inspiring. I mean, these are such simple creatures, and yet they're capable of such clever machinations.
So when it comes to a definition of a parasite, what is it, and how are you looking at what we define as a parasite?
That's a really good question because I think there's a lot of confusion about it. A parasite is any infectious organism, so it includes viruses and bacteria. And then, of course, a lot of the creatures that most of us think of as parasites, like ticks and leeches and lice and slugs, that kind of thing.
So when you look at these particular creatures and how they affect us, so far, your examples have been regarding rats and cats and spiders and webs and even fish. But please let it be known that humans are certainly not immune to this. Give us a sense of how parasites live on us and affect us and our behavior.
Well, the the cat parasite that I mentioned earlier, the one that manipulates the behavior of rodents, it can invade our own brains. The parasite's called Toxoplasma, and we can be exposed to it, for example, when we're changing cat litter boxes. And when scientists learned at the amazing ways that this parasite can manipulate rodents, they started to worry, you know, hey, what might it be doing in our own brains? And there's been a bunch of research done now over the years at laboratories across the world. And the research suggests that for a small percentage of people, we don't know how many, but that the parasite can cause, or it seems to be, a better way of putting it, it seems to be associated with a number of different kinds of mental disorders. For example, people who have schizophrenia are about 2 to 3 times more likely to test positive for the parasite. The rodents become sort of more reckless, and they lower their guard when they're infected, and they found that infected humans are more likely to be in car crashes. Studies in 3 different countries have found that, and the increase is about 2.7 times more likely to be in a crash where they're the party at fault. And then other research has looked at suicide. And in Europe, they have some of the best data because most women are tested for toxoplasmosis during pregnancy. That's where the best data lies, and researchers found that across 26 countries in Europe, that the incidence of suicidal behavior increased in direct proportion to the prevalence of the parasite in each country. Now, these are all correlational studies. They don't prove causation, but coupled with what we know about what the parasite does to animals, scientists are, you know, becoming concerned. And even though everyone assumes it's a minority of people who are affected, because the parasite is so prevalent, that minority could add up to millions of people. For example, about 20% of Americans are infected with a parasite. 50% of the French, interestingly, because they love their meat very rare. Saignant, yes. The word they use, literally bleeding. And another way in which the parasite can get into our bodies is by eating undercooked meat. And that's because when cattle are grazing, they can pick the parasite up from the ground, and it becomes incorporated in their tissues, which, you know, is the meat that we eat.
So 20% for us, I mean, that's still a very high number. But if we have, say, a cold or flu, it doesn't necessarily mean that a parasite is involved, although it could mean that.
Yes, people have expanded their research into, you know, other parasites that might be altering our behavior. And one in particular that they looked at, you mentioned colds and flu. One group studied people who had gotten actually a flu vaccine. And the reason they chose a flu vaccine is because the flu vaccine contains all the same components as the flu virus, only minus the, you know, infectious part. So the researchers assumed that when people are given a flu vaccine, that basically it's the body registers it as an attack by the flu virus. So they wanted to see if after being vaccinated, people's behavior changed. And they found that, in fact, there was a dramatic change, that they were much more likely to socialize and, you know, go to parties, seek out friends. It was a small study, so the scientists definitely want to see it replicated in a larger group, but it was certainly very intriguing. It certainly hints that, you know, the virus, to increase its spread, wants us to, you know, go out and hug and kiss and shake hands with a whole bunch of people.
That idea of how it affects us on a cultural level is really fascinating and something that you write about in the book. And there's a huge body of research on this, that we have this subconscious fear of parasites and contamination. And this is something that has evolved in our defense mechanism against these parasites.
Yes, we have what scientists call a behavioral immune system. Basically, it's a shield against parasites that few of us realize we possess. Basically, it's a part of our mind that is constantly scanning our surroundings for signs of contaminants, and when it spots them, triggers disgust and withdrawal from the, you know, potential disease-causing agent. And this part of our mind pays especially close attention to other people because we are walking germ bags. We are the leading source of infections. But it's crudely calibrated. For example, we might experience disgust in response to a rash or a snotty nose or an oozing eye, but we can also be disgusted by things that wouldn't harm us or not infectious. So, for example, you may be disgusted by pimples or liver spots or even excess body fat. Research shows can trigger disgust, and so in that sense, it can backfire. And then it's also we experience greater disgust when societal norms are broken, which is very interesting. The reason scientists think this happen is because a lot of customs may have the hidden function of protecting us from germs. So, for example, handshaking, or bowing, rather, instead of handshaking, or conservative sexual mores, or washing before prayer. Also, when we become... when we're experiencing high levels of disgust, we tend to be more xenophobic. In fact, some research shows that we actually, like if we're primed to think of germs, we're more likely to be disgusted by people that we perceive to belong to a different race or ethnicity than ourselves. So that's some of the uglier side of disgust.
So with that said, and looking at just our normal, everyday human contact with one another, should we be thinking about a fist bump rather than a handshake, and how much Purell should we be hanging around with?
You know, this is the interesting thing. Probably we overreact. We're probably way too worried about germs. And when I say too worried, I think a lot of this is happening at a subconscious level. And yes, in some cases, this our behavioral immune system, you know, really serves us well and helps to keep us safe from illness. But it's also backfiring all the time. So, you know, especially in a world in which many people are obese, or many people of different races, you know, live side by side, our behavioral immune system can be triggered again and again when, you know, these people don't pose any threat to us. So I think that, you know, you really have to pay attention to what disgusts you. I think we can become more conscious of it because, as I say, it can be a hidden source of prejudice. And of course, you know, I mean, sometimes we really do have reason to be concerned about germs. You know, I mean, there are nasty viruses like Ebola and so on. So, you know, some of our concerns are justified. And, yeah, that's the time to reach for the Purell. But a lot of times, you know, we become alarmed by signs that we misread as a potential threat and that aren't. You know, somebody with a harmless birthmark on their face can trigger disgust and maybe make you less likely to want to, you know, go up and give them a hug or shake their hands. But, you know, that birthmark is never going to harm you.
Well, the book is fascinating. It's This Is Your Brain on Parasites, How Tiny Creatures Manipulate Our Behavior and Shape Society. Kathleen McAuliffe is the author. Kathleen, thank you very much for spending time with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is This Is Your Brain on Parasites. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.